Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Nobody in Kansas City has sports like 96.5 The Fan.
Right side throw, touchdown! Kansas City, a 3-yard touchdown pass in overtime! Kansas City wins the game!
Welcome into The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
Back-to-back best sports talk host as voted on in the Pitch magazine.
Live from the Fan Studios, here's CDOT.
Let's do this. Another day, another dollar, another edition of The Drive. You are listening to The Drive on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. My name is Carrington Harrison. Very excited to be here with you on this wonderful, wonderful Tuesday. The Royals are back in action at Kauffman Stadium. They have a home series coming up against the Tampa Bay Rays. They also have a weekend series coming up against the Los Angeles Dodgers. We believe that Shohei is going to pitch on Saturday. If you look at the way the probable pitchers are lining up, I believe that Shohei Ohtani is going to pitch Saturday at Kauffman Stadium. We got a lot to get into in today's show. We have some further developments regarding the building of a new stadium for the Chiefs and the Royals we'll get to. We're also going to be joined by Josh Verner. We'll talk to him coming up in just a bit. Jeff Passan made a list of his 50 most likely players to be traded, his best value. Seth Lugo was 6th on that list. We'll talk about that. We'll talk a little NFL. There's certainly a lot to get into in today's show. Again, my name is Carrington Harrison. Excited to be here with you guys on this wonderful, wonderful Tuesday. Rob is here as well, taking you up until Royals and Rays. That game is today at 6:40. All right, before we get into it, you guys know the routine. I need you guys to do me a couple of favors. Number one, I need you listening to The Drive each day at 2 o'clock right here on 96.5 The Fan. And number two, I need you to tell one friend to check out the show. I mean, it'd be great if you guys could tell two friends to check out the show, but you know what? Beggars can't be choosers. If you guys could just tell one person to check out the show, you know what? I would appreciate that very much. All right, this is how I would like to start today's show. If you guys remember the movie 8 Mile, very early on in the movie, B-Rabbit's having some trouble. You know, he forgets his rhymes. He struggles in the early part of the movie. And you realize that this is a turning point in his life. If he's going to take this music thing very seriously, it needs to happen. He's hanging around with his friends. They're talking about what is he going to do? What are his future plans? Ultimately, we see how the movie turns out. And ultimately, we see how his career turns out. But that was a very pivotal moment. It feels like we are in a very, very similar position right now with the Kansas City Royals, where if something is going to happen, it feels like it needs to happen now. We are not that far away from the trade deadline. We're not that far away from the All-Star break. The halfway point of the Major League Baseball season is the final game of this series. We have seen a lot of Royals baseball, both good and bad. We have had some takeaways, both positive and negative. But if this team is going to put himself in the buyer's category, it feels like these next four series are ultimately going to define what the Royals should or should not do. So Rob pulled this information. The Royals this season are 19-10 against teams who are below 500. They are 19-30 against teams who are currently over 500. Why does that matter? Why are we sharing that stat with you? Well, over their next 13 games, they play Tampa Bay, who is 43-35. They play the Dodgers, who might be the best team in baseball. They're 48-31. Seattle is over 500. Arizona is also over 500. We're talking about you got a homestand, you got a series against maybe the best team in baseball, and then you go out west for a 6-game road trip, and that basically leads you into the All-Star break. This is a really, really important stretch for the Kansas City Royals, a team right now that has been hovering around or below 500 for basically the last 45 days or so. if the Royals are going to do this, where coming up in 3 weeks, people like me are going to advocate for them to go get a bat. If you're going to have an argument on why the Royals should push their chips in the middle of the table, be aggressive, and be buyers at the deadline, it's going to be largely based off what happens over these next 13 days. Things can go very positively for the Royals. Things could also go very poorly for the Royals. And we've seen them against heavyweight-type competition, or against teams who are in their same weight class. We've seen them struggle. There is no more room for that, not with these 13 games. You don't want to look up and you go 5-8. You go 4-9 in these next 13. You look up and you're 7-8 games under 500. I don't know how you can justify being buyers at the deadline if that's the case. That's when you start to have the conversation about trading Seth Lugo. That's when you have the conversation about moving off for some couple of pieces and being in a position to be ready for the 2026 season. Some teams are obviously going to be buyers at the deadlines. Some teams are going to be sellers. Some teams are going to choose to stay where they are and simply ride out the year. I don't know if we definitively have the answer yet on what the Royals are going to be. I'm not sure what category the Royals fall into, but I do know this. In a very crowded wild card conversation, you play a handful of those teams in the next couple of weeks. You play Tampa Bay, who is very much in that conversation. You play Seattle, who is also in that conversation. These are not games that you can afford to lose anymore. We make this reference when it comes to the postseason, but I think it applies now. Usually in the postseason, you have to overcome your fear. If you're a team that can't shoot free throws, if you're a team that has a shaky field goal kicker, the game will usually come down to those things. What the Royals have struggled with, I would say basically for the last year, year and a half, has been their ability to compete against teams like them. Nobody's expecting you to go out and sweep the Dodgers. I don't think that's the expectation. But you got a 6-game home series. Last time you had this, you lost every game in that. Can you win both of these series at home and have another 4-2 week? Can you go on the road and tread water against Seattle and Arizona? If you can do those things, you're hovering around 500, maybe your game or two over 500. I think the sentiment in the city is going to be, hey, this team is right there on the cusp. They're a game back, a game and a half back. Go make a move. Go do what you can to try to help this team potentially get over the hump. But Rob, there is a possibility that the Royals drown themselves over these next 2 weeks. When you look at how they've performed against teams that are over 500, they're 19-30, and that's all they basically have from now until the All-Star break.
It is July 7th is the day they're out of the wilderness, for lack of a better term, and they play the Pittsburgh Pirates at home. If they have a bad stretch in this, and I'm not saying 7-6, 6-7 bad. I'm saying if they go like they were last homestand, if they're 3-10, 4-9, if they're playing bad baseball over this 13-game stretch, I can't speak for you. I can't speak for Cody and Gold. I can't speak for Fesco and Dusty. But on July 7th, when we take the air and the Pittsburgh Pirates are in town, I will be advocating for the Royals to be sellers. It is that simple to me. This stretch is, the term we always use is tread water. If you tread water, I'll be pro buyers. Denny says all the time, this team needs a bat no matter what. Vern, who'll be on the show in a couple hours, is an advocate of getting a bat. If you're 7-6, 6-7 in this stretch, hey, you're not going to hear me say anything different. Get a bat because you're still in the fight. You're still right there. And obviously, if you do better than that, then, you know, that's great, great. But the Royals were bad last week. Up until that Ranger series, they've been playing bad ball. The Yankees swept them. The A's swept them. They were okay in St. Louis, but before that, they did not look like a strong baseball team. And if you have another stretch like that, it's time to talk about selling Lugo. It's time to talk about John Schreiber getting out of town. It's time to talk about anything that isn't nailed down and part of the growth for 26 being sent out to try to refresh, restart, and rebuild for next season. I'm not talking about a 5-year rebuild, but I'm talking about a sell project. But this stretch will determine how I feel about the team. July 7th's the date, and I will either say it's sellers or buyers. It's that simple to me.
If you are looking at the American League wildcard standings right now, Tampa Bay, they are first in the wildcard standing. They are 1.5 games up on the Toronto Blue Jays. The Seattle Mariners, if the playoffs ended today, they would be in the postseason. They're a half game up on the Cleveland Guardians. Clearly a lot of baseball left, so you don't put a lot of stock into where teams are currently positioned when it comes to the wildcard race. But I also think it is important to note, if you are looking at the wild card race, there are currently six teams ahead of the Kansas City Royals. So you are talking about, you got to do things that separate yourself. And when you have games at home against the Tampa Bay Rays, that is what we're talking about. You are a handful of games back against the Seattle Mariners. You got a four-game series against them next week. You got Arizona, who is basically what you are in the National League. So you play some common opponents here over this 13-game stretch. You don't need to go 11-2, but you also can't eliminate yourself. You have to what you said, Rob, you have to tread water, and you just got to start stringing together positive series. You had a good road trip where you won 4 of 6. Can you do something very similar when you come back home and erase the bad taste of your mouth the last time that you were at Kauffman Stadium and you got swept in back-to-back series and scored 11 runs over those 6 games? We'll continue to talk a lot of baseball as the day progresses. Vern's going to be on the show today as well. Coming up on the other side, Rob, let's keep the stadium conversation going as we are less than a week away from the star bonds expiring in the state of Kansas. The state of Missouri continues to say that they do not need to put something on the initiative to get a downtown stadium passed in the state of Missouri. We'll talk about it next. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
This man was a bona fide scrub.
On 96.5 The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
All right, this is what I would like to do. Let's get to the latest stadium news, as there was a story earlier today on Fox 4. Rob, you were also gone when the Chiefs wrapped up all of their mini camp and offseason. You and I haven't had an opportunity to talk about what you think the plan could potentially be for the Chiefs at left tackle. We'll get to that coming up in just a bit. But let's get you guys the latest stadium information. This information comes courtesy of Fox 4.
Councilman O'Neill believes the city can redirect a lot of taxes like the state is doing, plus the Port Authority, which he's the vice chair of, can issue bonds.
We believe that we can do that without any problems, to be honest.
Councilwoman Andrea Boo, who also chairs the Economic Development Corporation of Kansas City Board, says she believes the June 30th date of the Royals picking where they want to build was set by the state of Kansas. That's the current date the star bond offer expires there, but state leaders can extend it.
It's not the city's decision that we have to have a proposal by June 30th. We want to be prepared, and we think that we are prepared. We have the team in place that's necessary to respond when the Royals make a determination on where they're going to go.
Washington Square Park is owned by the city's Parks and Rec Department, so that board would need to approve something dealing with the stadium.
When do you guys envision them considering an agenda item regarding a Royals stadium?
Quickly. We need the parks to approve moving rights over to Port or EDC to negotiate this project. And that should happen fairly soon.
O'Neill says the Royals need to tell the city where they want to go. And when they do, they need entities like the EDC and the Port Authority to work together.
That was the news report courtesy of Fox 4. Certainly a lot to look at. I think it is important to note that almost every single time this is brought up in regards to the Royals, this is not a Chiefs part of this conversation. Every time it is brought up regarding the Royals, they keep telling you they don't need your approval to do this. They asked for your approval the first time. That was the public vote that got shot down. Every conversation since then has been, hey, we were just asking you guys. Now we feel like we have the ability to build it downtown and we're going to redirect money and funds. And our plan is to still build a downtown stadium, just not where we intended to do it a year or so ago. So I think that is very, very important to note. Now, I think we all can deal with this, even if you are not in the weeds when it comes to the stadium. Usually things with government take a long time. Usually any government-assisted area usually takes a long time. So I understand how the wheels on this could be moving kind of slowly. Well, hey, we're coming up with this plan, but in order to do that, we need A, B, and C. We got to talk to this person. We got to get this over moved. We got to put it in this. It sounds like it's a lot of behind the scenes. Rob, let me ask you this. Let's say that all of this is true, right? Let's take them at their word. That we know that they have some of the money locked up now from the state. That's what the special session was for, what, 2 weeks ago. So we know that part is complete. The state of Missouri has contributed what they are going to contribute to funding a new baseball stadium for the Royals. If the city is actually right on this, and hey, we can get some bonds passed, we can get this part of the city moved over to this place, and we can figure this thing out, and we don't think we need to do so with the vote, isn't that the best plan for the Royals? Better than 119th and all, better than moving out to the Legends, isn't that the best plan? The state is going to pay for it. The city's going to move some things around. They're going to build a brand new ballpark in downtown Kansas City that's centrally located. Isn't that the best solution for everybody? I know that the Kansas Star Bonds is a very attractive offer, but I don't see the Royals passing up on a development that would give them what the owner said he wanted from the first day that he took over. The state is going to pay for this. The city and county are going to pay for this. You guys contribute $100, $200 million, and you can have exactly what you said you wanted. I just don't see them passing on that to move to 119th and all.
I agree. I think the Royals want to be downtown. But I'm going to ask a question that you've asked a lot about the Kansas side. I'm going to ask about the Missouri side. Because in that story from John Ketz, friend of the show, he mentions that the people he interviewed said, once the Royals pick a location, they're ready to go to make these legal and government maneuverings to help them out so they can avoid a public vote. We've known about Washington Square Park now for 3 months, 2 months. The mayor's been on this show at least three times talking about Washington Square Park. He mentioned renderings of Washington Square Park. He's mentioned what that news story mentioned. Hey, it's Park's land, so we can, you know, redistribute some money and we can get them the stadium they want. He has always at least come on this show and spoke positively about the Royals being at Washington Square Park. It's not some industry secret. Why aren't they there yet? Because it feels like that checks every box the Royals want. They want to be downtown. Check. They want to be near an entertainment district. Check. They want to do it without a public vote. Check. They want to get it paid for by the city, state, taxpayers, however you view it. Check, check, and check. Like, at this point, I will ask you the question you asked me about why the Star Bonds initiative isn't being greenlit by the Chiefs and Royals. Why isn't this Washington Square Park thing done, and done by the Royals? What seems to be the hangup?
I think that's a very, very fair question. What it sounds to me, and tell me if you're feeling or hearing something different, it sounds to me like one side needs the other side to commit before anything really happens. I'm guessing, this is just a pure guess on my end, once the Royals and the Chiefs make a decision about what they want to do and where they want to be, I think we'll see that things will then start to happen rather quickly. Tomorrow, if the Royals have a special press conference and the Royals just come out and say, hey, this is our plan. We are committed to being in downtown Kansas City. We are no longer going to entertain the state of Kansas, and we are willing to make a public commitment, and we are figuring it out together. I think some of this would kind of move things along. If you remember, during the special session, now, ultimately, it didn't matter. It got passed, but Missouri lawmakers asked the Chiefs and the Royals, hey, our vote is kind of dependent on, are you guys willing to make a commitment to Missouri? Are you guys willing to make a commitment to stay? And neither team was willing to do so. So in some ways, this feels like a big game of chicken. The Royals maybe want to see the city and county do something. The city and county are waiting for the Royals to do something. And that has kind of left us in this kind of quandary that we're in. I also think something that's pretty important based on what we just heard. Missouri, and I think this is an obvious point, Missouri was saying, hey, that June 30th, that's their deadline, not ours. That has nothing to do with us. That's their timetable. That's not our timetable. Hey, we're getting all our ducks in a row. We're trying to figure everything out. We're fine if this thing is July 3rd, July 7th, whenever it could potentially be. You do keep hearing that something's going to happen rather quickly. Are any of you getting a vibe that something is happening rather quickly? I mean, the deadline for this thing is in 6 days. Do you feel like the Chiefs and the Royals are ready to make an announcement in the next 6 days about the future of the Truman Sports Complex? That's just not really the vibe that I'm getting. I think we would be hearing more smoke, or you would be hearing a little bit more, hey, this thing is actually going to happen tomorrow, or you're getting it. Kind of like what happens with the trade. I know this is on a much smaller scale, but Rob, you were on social media this weekend. Somebody told us Kevin Durant was being traded later today, and then he got traded later today. Something tells me when the Royals or Chiefs are ready to make a decision, I don't know if they're going to be able to keep that completely in-house. Somebody finds out about it, and then it is tomorrow the Royals are planning a special press conference where they're going to tell us. I just don't get a sense that that's going to happen here in the next 4 or 5 days. That's just not the way this feels like it's trending.
I talked about this yesterday in the show, and it's related to both the Chiefs and the Royals. I think Kansas is going to extend the Starbond thing, and we're going to be talking about this past June 30th. I know that news story just said it will come together rather quickly. I know we had Representative Dan Hawkins on the show a month ago, and he says this thing can come together quickly. We're 6 days away from the Starbonds expiring, and it feels like nothing is coming together, and quickly is not a word I would use at all. So if you were a betting man, if I was your FanDuel sportsbook, it feels like Starbond extension and more speculation is the massive betting favorite, because it just feels like right now we're in this endless cycle of the same news stories. And I bet, and it's our job to do it, if and when Kansas extends the Starbonds, we'll talk about that. But the talk will be largely the same. The Kansas offer is this. The Missouri offer is this. At this point, there ain't much change in either offer other than what the stadiums and renderings look like. We know what the city can offer the Royals. We know what the state can offer the Royals and Chiefs. And we know what Kansas can offer the Royals and or Chiefs. Like, it feels like we're just in a holding pattern and little bits of info leak out. And because it's a massive deal, we react to every little bit of info.
I will say this. If you are playing this thing out like an odds maker and you're making the book for FanDuel or DraftKings, the odds are drastically turning back towards Missouri. There was a while there where a new Chiefs stadium in Kansas was like a minus 400 favorite. I don't know if that's the case anymore. The Royals have only really talked about or mentioned that 119th and all site right before the vote passed in Missouri. They've never seemed super excited about that. And then shockingly, 2 days before a special session in Missouri, we get the, oh yeah, by the way, the Royals bought this thing. Okay. That was kind of it. The story honestly just kind of went away. I would say the tide is turning a little bit where it feels. Robin, tell me where you are on the gambling odds. I would say right now a Arrowhead renovation is probably a minus 120 favorite. A new stadium is probably plus 110. The Royals moving to downtown Kansas City feels like minus 180 to me. Like, I think at this point, if you're asking, it is more likely to me that both teams are in Missouri than both teams are in Kansas. I do think that. And I'm not sure if that was the case maybe 3 months ago if you were playing this thing out. And I think the tide is actually turning that it feels more likely that the Chiefs are going to stay where they are instead of building a new stadium. The feel of momentum, at least in the way that this story has been reported since Missouri passed that special session a couple of weeks ago, the tide has definitely turned more toward the Missouri side than it was prior.
I agree with that on the whole. If I was getting into the nitty-gritty of the odds making, man, Washington Square Park feels like better than minus 180. I believe that's what you had it at. It feels like it's a minus 220, minus 280. Like, everything about Washington Square Park checks every box for what we know the Royals have wanted. They don't want another public vote. John Ketz has said it. Matt Evans has said it. Like, I'm sure Fesco has said it in the morning. The Royals don't want another public vote. They can do Washington Square Park without that. So, like, if you were to odds make just the Royals, it feels like an enormous favorite at this point. They're going to end up at Washington Square Park. Like, not just downtown. You can call your shot. It feels like minus 220, minus 250. It makes way too much sense. You're right. The Chiefs, I do feel like the tide has turned and renovation has taken over, but there's still an element. You hear reporting from Nate Taylor, albeit 2-3 weeks ago, that they want a dome and they like Super Bowls and those sorts of things. So I think it's, you know, like a minus 105 to a plus 120, but the Royals feels like overwhelmingly it's Washington Square Park. We're just waiting on the announcement.
This would be my question to the Royals, and I'm not really sure if we will ever get the answer to this. I wonder why the Royals just didn't do this from the very, very beginning. Like, I wonder why if the Royals had any inkling or feeling that they didn't need a public vote to build a downtown stadium, I'm a little bit surprised that their focus groups and their polling decided to go with a very unpopular public decision that kind of embarrassed them a little bit. Like, the Royals got egg on their face a year ago. They got pummeled at the polls. And you can blame a million different things, but they got pummeled at the polls. Like, a resounding, no, we don't want this. Try again. I would be very interested to know why the Royals decided to go forward with that plan and not the plan that they are currently sounding like they're going to go with. Hey, we think we can do, you don't have to increase your sales tax. We think we can do this by, we'll get a little bit of money from the state, we'll redirect some funds from other places, and we're going to build a downtown stadium of your dreams. I don't know why the Royals just didn't take the extra 10 months to do all of this legwork to get you to this conclusion if they're going to get the downtown stadium that they want in a way that much more people will celebrate than the way before. That is a little bit surprising. And last thing here, and we'll move on because I do want to talk about the Chiefs on the football field. A lot of that new stadium buzz does kind of feel like it's going away. A lot of that new stadium buzz. Now, I will give Clark this. Clark has kind of maintained that he wants to stay at Arrowhead for your father, the history, all of those things. And if you can get the money part about it right, maybe that's where they end up staying. It really does feel like the tide has certainly turned on this in the last 2 or 3 weeks or so. So, Rob, you were not here. You were celebrating your one-year wedding anniversary, so I want to play a couple of these cuts. So I asked Nate Taylor, who does he feel will be the starting left tackle for the Chiefs week one? Here's what he said.
Oh, it's got to be Jalen Moore. Let's be serious, kids. Let's all take a deep breath, and I know that the Chiefs want us to believe, Carrington. The Chiefs are trying very hard. Andy Reid specifically is saying, no, like Joshua Simmons, give him all the credit. He's been ahead of schedule every step of the way from the moment they selected him in the first round on opening draft night. But let's be clear. The guy's coming off a non-contact knee injury. The more time you give Joshua Simmons the ability to get up to NFL speeds, to get his knee to be strengthened, to not put the burden of like, hey, protect the greatest quarterback we've ever seen on opening night, because didn't we just kind of see that last year with Kingsley Suamataia? Well, hey, that's why you went out and you paid Jalen Moore on a somewhat of a prove-it deal. Hey, start NFL starting money. Hey, it's a two-year deal. We can get out of it in year two if we don't like how it goes in year one. And you don't have to push Joshua Simmons to be ready for opening night the way that they tried to push Kingsley Suamataia, who, by the way, was fully healthy entering the NFL. So give a ton of credit and respect to Joshua Simmons. We know how talented he could be when fully healthy based on his tape in college. But I think the logical, more educated guess is, hey, man, Jalen Moore's played in the NFL. You should probably trust him on opening night.
Rob, I'll be curious to get your thoughts on this because you were gone whenever we had this conversation. The Chiefs gave Jalen Moore $21 million over the next couple of seasons. I think in a lot of ways, you kind of owe it to yourself to see if he can be an every down starter in the league. I mean, I'm looking at this in a 2-year vacuum and not a 1-year vacuum, that I understand the point that a lot of people have made of just, hey, you got three guys, pay the best two and then move on. But there's also the financial aspect attached to it. Juwan Taylor making a whole lot of money. Jalen Moore, at least from a guaranteed standpoint, making a lot of money. The Chiefs have a left tackle issue for this season and have a right tackle issue for next season. Juwan Taylor will not be on next year's Chiefs team. I think the best thing for the Chiefs in 2025 is to start Jalen Moore at left tackle. Let's finish out the Juwan Taylor contract. At the end of this season, Joshua Simmons either slides into left tackle or you put him over at right. Jalen Moore has a great year. You then give him an extension that gives him a little bit more guaranteed money and prolongs how long he's going to be there. And then you feel like you got your starting five offensive linemen for at least the next three seasons, where you would have either Jalen Moore or Joshua Simmons on the left, flip that on the right side, and then you have your three interior linemen. I think that's the best case scenario for the Chiefs. But if you're hearing the reports, it sounds like Josh Simmons is going to be all systems ago and going to be ready for training camp. How would you handle their left tackle situation?
Well, first things first, and I know Andy Reid said he should be ready to go on Friday when I was gone. I am extremely skeptical of that being real life. Like, I know he said it, and we'll see. I think Rashee Rice is 100% ready to go. Everything around the draft, all the buzz, all the hype, all the talk about Josh Simmons revolved around people taking him off their first-round boards because of the injury and the timeline of his injury. And a lot of thought when they drafted him was, oh, at worst, this could be a redshirt type of move. I have a hard time believing the draft happens in, what, April or May? And it's June, July, and we're a month away from him being totally ready to go? So that's first things first. I remain a little bit skeptical because unless his body is the Wolverine, the timeline just isn't making sense to me. So that's first things first. Now we'll get to your answer to your question. If Joshua Simmons is, in fact, 100% ready to go, and everything they're saying is 1,000% accurate, you have to start Joshua Simmons left tackle on day one. You make him win the job at St. Joe, not like Kingsley last year where they unpacked their bags at whatever that dorm is, Scanlon Hall or whatever, and then, hey, walk onto the practice field in shorts and a t-shirt. It's your job, Kingsley. You make Josh Simmons earn it, but it makes more financial sense. It makes more sense for the future. It makes more sense for the now. It makes more sense for all the things if you have Joshua Simmons as your day one left tackle, because if he is in fact healthy, he was considered one of the top offensive linemen in this draft class, and there's no point in teaching him right tackle or, you know, having him redshirt for a year if he can go just to pay Jalen Moore and then cut him at the end of year one. If everything they're saying is accurate, Josh Simmons needs to win the job and needs to be your day one starter.
Yeah, I'm looking at the financials of it. So this is how the $21 million is guaranteed for Jalen Moore. He is obviously guaranteed his signing bonus. The Chiefs gave him $7.4 million in a signing bonus. His salary for this year is fully guaranteed. So that's $6.7 million for this season. And $7 million in next year's salary is also guaranteed. And his base salary is $14.2 million. That's why I think for Jalen Moore, and I certainly get the sentiment, it's sports, play the best player. But what do you do about this contract that you have signed for a player if now he is a backup and then next year you're kind of in a situation where you kind of need him for next year? I think the best thing for the Chiefs is to figure out if Jalen Moore can play and be an every down starter. In my opinion, you got time to figure that out with Joshua Simmons. You got him under contract at most for the next 5 years. You really have Jalen Moore on a one-year contract. That's essentially what this is. I know it's a two-year for $30 million deal, but we all know how these deals work, and the Chiefs can get out of it next year if something goes wrong. This is essentially a one-year trial run to see if Jalen Moore can be an every-down starter in the league. To me, you owe it to yourself to see if he can play or not. You owe it to yourself to at least see if he can be an every-down starter. Now, if an injury happens, you can't control that. Let's say the Jawan Taylor goes down in week three and now you got to move somebody over and then they end up playing with such continuity that that's how you have to do it. Or Jalen Moore gets hurt in week six, Josh Simmons comes in, plays well, and then he loses his job. That's kind of what sports happens. But if you commit this kind of salary to a player, you commit $21.2 million to a player, to me, you just kind of owe it to him to at least see what he can do on the field, see if he can be an every down starter for you, and to see if he can be an every down starter in the league. That's the one part of information that we don't have in Jalen Moore. So I certainly get why you would side with your first overall pick. I think I'm siding with Jalen Moore. I think I'm siding with he needs to be your starter.
So then in that world, are you just redshirting Josh Simmons? Or are you teaching? See, this is where me and you just differ. And I remember on draft night, it was the day after the draft, it was one thing we differed on then. The whole value of first round picks is the fifth year. And by redshirting a guy, you're basically eliminating the one financial benefit that he has. We saw it with, we've seen it to an extent with Felix Anudike Uzama. Now it's partly production, but you don't, the whole benefit of that fifth year that the NFLPA worked in, they worked in, is that you get a fifth year of cheap team control on a quality player. By redshirting a guy, you're eventually saying no thanks and burning that for no rhyme or reason. That's another reason why I would play Josh Simmons if he's ready. I would eat it. It's a fake 21. I would eat it with $21 million. I would eat it with Jalen Moore's contract. Hey, sometimes You sign bad deals. Juwan Taylor was a bad deal. Anthony Hitchens was a bad deal. They happen. You can overcome them, especially the way that Jalen Morris is formatted. But I feel like giving up a free year of cheap Josh Simmons just to play Jalen Moore in a, hey, we got to figure it out, is a bad system and bad logic to me.
Yeah, I'm thinking, though, you're going to have to give up some of that money. And if you were telling me that the worst case, let's say that Jalen Moore starts. Let's say we go with my plan. Jalen Moore starts and he is great. He is a above average left tackle. And then you play Joshua Simmons next year, and let's say he has two, three very solid years, then that's a player you're talking about extending anyway. I think sometimes we kind of overvalue that fifth-year option. That fifth-year option to me is if you're unsure about a player. If you plan on signing that player and that player being a long-term player, the fifth-year option to me just isn't as important. Like, we're not talking about that with George Karlaftis. That's a player you want to keep long-term. We're not talking about that with Trent McDuffie. That's a player that ultimately you want to keep into the fold. You're going to extend him, and you're going to give him $50, $60 million guaranteed anyway. So I think that, and I think that fifth-year option to me is much more for players on the fringe and players you are unsure about. I don't know if it's maybe used in this context. But it certainly is something that you have in your back pocket, that you do have that extra year of club control and cost control if you need to use it. Coming up in about an hour or so, we are going to be joined by Josh Vernier, our Royals insider. The Royals are back in town. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
Hey, it's Lucas Ersig from the Kansas City Royals. You're listening to The Drive with CDOT on 96.5 The Fan.
Brought to you by DM Entry Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Entry Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
All right, coming up in just a little bit, we'll get to the Colin Cowherd on his show made a few bold predictions. We'll get to that coming up at 3 o'clock. But before then, you know, the Kansas City caught a couple of strays. Amon-Ra St. Brown, who's probably one of the five best receivers in the National Football League. He has a podcast. I don't know if I would consider it to be a very popular podcast. I'm not saying that as a place of shade. I just don't really hear or see too many people talking about it. But it pops up from time to time on the timeline. He just had Cam Scadabu on his show, I believe, a couple of weeks ago. So he was having a conversation on his podcast, and he threw some shots at my hometown. Listen to this.
I've been to Kansas City. I was there for the draft. I'm sorry. Like, if you have money, like, I'm not living here after I get some money. Like,
I mean, you just got to know the right places to go.
Are you planning on going back, like living there for the rest of your life?
No, I'll probably get a place in like Dallas or something. My fiance from Dallas. Oh,
yeah, that's better.
Something
that's
like better. That. It's definitely, yeah, I would say it's more to do. And like, you're right. I mean, there's only so much to do.
Exactly.
It's
like,
good food.
You're capped
though.
Out. In
yeah, yeah, yeah.
So coming from Kansas City.
Hey, why did Amon-Ra St. Brown have to throw that shot at us? What do we do to Amon-Ra St. Brown? Why did he have to say that about Kansas City? What do we do? He currently works in Detroit. I don't know if that was necessary for Amon-Ra St. Brown. Just out of nowhere, unprovoked. Now, I get it. You get a little bit of money. He was talking to Jalen Noel. His fiance is from Dallas. You want to live in Dallas. Dallas does seem like a cool place to live if you got a little bit of paper. But Kansas City's an incredible place to live even if you got a little bit of money. Get you a nice house out in Briarcliff. Get you a nice house on War Parkway. Rob, get you one of those houses out in Leawood, Overland Park. Get you a nice house. I can't believe Amon-Ra St. Brown, really out of nowhere, unprovoked, just firing shots at Kansas City, Missouri. Very uncalled for. Very unnecessary.
It was so random, too, because he had Jalen Noel on, and I know Jalen Noel is from the area. I believe he went to Park Hill, maybe Park Hill South. So someone will correct me, but Jalen Noel, the Iowa State player, he's from Kansas City. It's like he found it on the podcast. Oh, you're from Kansas City. Well, I was there for the draft, and it stinks. What? Well, it's very random. If Amon-Ra talked bad about Green Bay, I get it. Amon-Ra St. Brown, I believe he went to what, USC for college? If he wants to talk bad about, you know, Stanford or Phoenix or one of those places, go crazy. It is an extremely random shot at Kansas City based on his 24 hours in town for the draft. Like, it's not like during the draft the players are here for 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 days. It's kind of wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. It just feels like the epitome of catching strays.
Yeah, I have a belief that a lot of American cities are very, very similar. And there may be, I don't know, somewhere between like 8 to 12 actually unique places to live in America. Like if you've been to Los Angeles, it's its own entity. If you've been to Miami, a very different kind of place. If you've been to New Orleans, like there's pockets of the country that are very, very different. But man, I've been to Omaha. I've been to Oklahoma City. I've been to Kansas City. I've been to Oklahoma City. I've been to like, there aren't that many differences in these places. Sure, some of it is like culture of the city and climate and things that you like to do. It's not really that different. If you want a good Midwest place to live, Kansas City is a great place to live. Now, some people want life a little bit faster, a little bigger. You value different things. Certainly get that. But Kansas City is a really good Midwestern city. And I'd put our city up against a lot of comparable cities. There was no need for this from Amon-Ra St. Brown. No need at all.
And the fact, I mean, you're right. I'm not disagreeing. The city is great. It just feels like a random conduit to be the person to say it. Like, if you were interviewing Max Crosby, okay, I get it. Or I'm trying to think, if there's an NFL player who's from St. Louis, or interviewing Jason Tatum, and he's like, listen, I hate Kansas City. Whatever. I get it. Amon-Ra St. Brown? Really? That's the person who's going to be the... Have the Lions played if Lions played one game here, and his, like, he spent 2 days in town, and he has this sweeping claim? That's just wild behavior to me.
I also think this, too, and I say this as a proud Kansas City resident, but we've all traveled to enough places. Do we have a lot of touristy places? Like, this does seem like one of those things that if you're an outsider, if you're Amon-Ra St. Brown, you kind of got to be with somebody that can tell you exactly what to do and where to go. Like, it's not like an easy Googleable place where Google will tell you the 5, 6 things to do. Like, you kind of got to know a resident of the city to have a really good time, I think, if you're just coming in for 2 or 3 days. Because then I think your trip to Kansas City then turns into you eat barbecue and like a field trip. Like, then you do all the things that we did when we were in high school. Oh, you go see this museum. Oh, you go to this place. That I do think when you go to some other cities, there are like different things or there's like easy, like touristy things to do. Like in Seattle, you go to Seattle. Oh, you want to go see the fish market. Oh, you want to go see the Space Needle. You want to go see the gum wall. I don't know if we have a lot of those things in Kansas City. So I do understand as a tourist how it might be a little difficult for you to come here if you're only here for a very short period of time. Because I'm not sure if you're hanging around the right tour guide to really give you the full Kansas City experience.
I'm not trying to skirt your question, but isn't that the case with most Midwestern cities? Like you said, you've been to Omaha. You've been to Oklahoma City. Like I'm sure I've been to Omaha. I had a great time in Omaha. I had people who were like, hey, you got to do these things in Omaha. I mean, the zoo is the big one, but obviously do X, Y, and Z. I mean, I guess in the St. Louis would be the arch is the only example, but hey, there's a way to have fun in St. Louis, so you got to do X, Y, and Z. If you wander into any Midwestern city, Indianapolis comes a lot on this up on this show a lot. If I just went to Indianapolis like tomorrow, I would not have a good time because I would have no idea what to do other than eat shrimp at St. Elmo's. And then I'd be like, what do I do the rest of my time here? I'm just in Indianapolis.
Yeah, no, you would be kind of stuck for a minute. You wouldn't really know the vibes. You wouldn't know the situation. You wouldn't know where to go. I want to play this for you guys. Aaron Rodgers earlier today was on the Pat McAfee show, and Aaron Rodgers says that this is likely his last season in the National Football League.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure this is it. You know, that's why we just did a one-year deal. Steelers didn't need to, you know, put any extra years on that or anything. So, you know, this was really about finishing with a lot of love and fun and peace for the career that I've had. I mean, I played 20 freaking years. You know, like, it's been a long run, and I've enjoyed it. And what better place to finish than in one of the cornerstone franchises of the NFL with Mike Tomlin and the great group of leadership and great guys in the city that, you know, expects you to win.
I am going to be very, very intrigued at how history remembers Aaron Rodgers. Because he obviously has turned into a very polarizing figure for a lot of people. And I get why he's polarizing. Aaron's never done anything wrong. Like, I get how in the end people didn't like Brett Favre. Like, if you've seen the documentary, Brett Favre has been accused of some very serious things. So I can understand how somebody was like, I don't know, not really a Brett Favre individual. I don't know if Aaron Rodgers has ever done anything to that magnitude. Certainly not nothing that we know of. But I'm going to be really curious for a couple different reasons. Like, there is the football side of it. Aaron Rodgers put together one of the best quarterback seasons that we have ever seen. That stretch from 2011 to 2013, he was a machine. He was amazing. So I do think there is the, hey, I haven't seen many players who have ever played the quarterback position better than Aaron Rodgers. He is one of the greatest quarterbacks from a physical standpoint that we have ever seen before. I also think there's the component of, hey, when you're as talented as he's been and you've done this for as long as he has, you only got one Super Bowl appearance. Like, there is a feeling that Aaron should have more. He should have two rings and four appearances. He should have one ring and three appearances. But he only has the one, and that was, what, 14, 15 years ago now at this point? So I even think his football legacy is a little bit complicated because he certainly showed us the position played at the absolute highest level, but necessarily in the biggest moments wasn't really an elevator to get his team over the hump. And I think at the end, I just think he's annoyed a lot of people. He said in this interview, he said that we're not going to hear from him again when he retired. My brother, you did a Netflix documentary. You don't really live a life in which you don't want people to discuss you. Like, I believe that with certain athletes, Jokic from the Nuggets. I don't think that we're going to see a lot of Nikola Jokic when he's done. Hey, I love playing basketball, but when basketball is over, I'm going to go back to my country. And sure, I'll pop up for some big occasions, but for the most part, I'm going to live a very quiet, private life. Nothing about Aaron Rodgers has lived a quiet, private life. At one point, you dated the most famous female athlete in the world. You made a Netflix documentary. You tried out to be the host of Jeopardy. Everything about your existence says that you want to be famous, and there's nothing wrong with wanting to be famous, but now you want us to believe that you're just going to go into the night? I'm not buying that. I'm also not entirely sure this is going to be his last year playing in the NFL. Let's say Rodgers is really good this year. Let's say the Steelers go 12-5, 12-6, and end up being Aaron's just going to walk away still playing football at a really high level. At this point, I don't really know how much you can put stock into what he says, but it's certainly interesting whenever he decides to talk. Coming up at the top of the hour, Colin Cowherd gave some of his bold season predictions. We'll go through them. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.